This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving to the church. This is take two. Oh, rats. Rats. So I was driving from work over to my dad's. And I thought, oh, I'll just record the podcast there. So I did the whole thing. This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving to my dad's. I did the whole thing. Drove around the neighborhood, got it all taken care of, blah, 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 blah. Pull into my dad's driveway. I'm like, hey, there you go. That's the podcast for this week. Then I look down. It's not recording. Oh. So this is take two. Okay, so couple of things here. All is going well at work. We're putting out forms. We're talking about stuff. We're moving forward. Moving forward. As far as I know, everything's okay. So that's all going fine. There's the standard. It's technology. So there's little hiccups here and there. But for the most part, we're doing fine. Okay. So that's good. The writing is going well. I'm in the process of editing book 7. I hope to have all those edits in by this evening. I have a few more to go. So I hope to be able to get that finished up this evening. If I can, great. If not, I'll do it tomorrow morning after I finish grocery shopping. I've got a cute t-shirt for tomorrow. It's called Breakfast, but it's done in the Star Wars styling. It's because there's a Star Wars movie coming out. And so it has these different things on it, like Chew Bacon for Chewbacca. Chew Bacon and Luke Skywaffle and Tart Vader and Ham Solo. And Greedo. I love Greedo because Greedo is Greedonut. And there's a smoking hole in the middle of the donut from Ham Solo shooting him. Yeah, it's fun stuff. Anyways, so that's tomorrow, and I'll get that done. And then I'll start my read-through. The read-through will take me a week. And then I'll produce all the files. I'm not sure how many comments I'll actually have on the back cover for this book. Because, you know. But I am glad I wrote the book. I'm glad I put in the book what is in the book. You know, some of these things need to be said so that we can think about them, so that we can do better, so that we can be prepared. So, you know, that's fine. Make some people uncomfortable, but that's okay too, because this stuff is important. Anyways, so that's all good. As a follow-on to what I said, was talking about last week, I said, week before last week, week before last. Anyways, I read an article, and hopefully I just scanned it, so hopefully I have all the information correct. If I don't, you know, well, I'm driving and I'm talking at the same time. Selma Hayek has now come out and talked about her experience of working with Harvey Weinstein. And obviously, what she related is not great. But I was specifically interested in the fact that she was working on this project with Harvey Weinstein. And she said that as part of what she ascribed to as sexual harassment, I'm not saying it's not, I'm just saying this is what she told as part of her narrative to show what type of a man he was. She said that he insisted that the movie Frida, that Selma Hayek was involved with, include a sex scene. Insisted that it did. And she didn't want to, but he insisted that it did, so they decided to shoot it. She said on that day, her stomach was in knots, she was having to take Valium to calm herself down, and this is what we were talking about. This idea that we have female actors who are being required to perform certain actions in front of the camera that they might not want to do, that are having to drug themselves up or inebriate themselves in order to get themselves to the point where they can actually carry these acts out. When are we going to call this for what it is? And that's simply sexual harassment. That's all it is. You've got someone, a man who is in power, who is requiring a woman to do things she would not normally do simply because of his position of power. Things that are sexual in nature or reproductive in nature. I mean, I don't understand what the difference is here. And so it's going to be really interesting to see at what point female actresses are going to start saying, no, that's not necessary. I didn't agree to that. I'm not doing that. And what the backlash will be against all this. This is going to be really very, very interesting. And I'm also working on this, an idea about how long-term this can actually be, this standing up and this saying, you know, we're not doing this anymore and those kind of things. And the only reason that I'm, you know, would have any reason to say, you know, it's can't be long-term is because there are some ways in which equality, in which kindness and generosity plays against flesh and plays against the engines of reproduction. Because the engines of reproduction do not care. They do not care about you or about your feelings or about the fullness of your life. They don't care. They just want you to make babies. That's it. Make babies. And so it's interesting to kind of ponder where this is all going and ponder whether or not those men who engage in these attempts to be fair, to be kind, to be generous, whether or not these kinds of men are more likely to reproduce, or whether or not the bad boys, the ones who are more careless about women, whether they are more likely to reproduce. Because if they are more likely to reproduce, then there is every possibility that in fact it's going to be very hard to breed out male aggression in any sort of substantial way, because changing society to where it's more gentle and kind might result in fewer babies being born to those who are gentle and kind, or to those who are enculturated as gentle. It's an interesting idea. And it's not original necessarily with me, because it's an offshoot of a movie called Idiocracy, which I cannot recommend, but it was an interesting premise. Anyways. Okay, this week, since this is take two of this podcast, this week, I was watching a TED Talk. And the name of the TED Talk was, Can You Get an MIT Education for $2,000? By Sean Young. This was pretty interesting. And I'm just going to go ahead and, because I'm at church here, I'm going to go ahead and just shut off the car here. And we'll just chat for a little bit. And then I have to go inside because they're having a thank you dinner for the worship team people tonight. And I need to go attend that. So I'm going to go in. Anyways, so he was talking about the high cost of education. And he said, it might surprise those of you who graduated more than two decades ago to learn that it now costs students over 2.5 times as much as it did for you. Probably more, because my entire college education was $10,000. And I know now that even in our little town here in Springfield, that students are coming out having racked up $40,000, $50,000 in debt. So, you know, and it's a tough problem because nobody can bear this. You know, the students, the government, nobody can bear the cost of these educations. And yet at the same time, businesses want employees that have good analytical skills, you know, because ta-da, that's what the world runs on now. Runs on brains and information and data and all that kind of stuff. But I'm fascinated by the trending here that it's easy to see that just because you have initials behind your head from some, behind your name from some college, doesn't mean that you necessarily have these skills. And if the ability to get these skills is readily and freely available online, then how long will it be before employers decide this is dumb? Why are we paying people just because they have these initials from this college behind their name? Why don't we pay them for what they know? Why don't we test them for that and pay them for that? And once we get to that point, then all the free information that's available online, ta-da! You know, I mean, there's no reason why you would need to go sit there in college for 4 years. And this guy was talking about that when he decided that on a major, he was really trying to choose between business and computer science. He chose business, frankly, he said, because there were more women in there. I mean, literally, he put two pie charts up and he said, this as a freshman, this is how I decided. You know, in business, there's about 50%. About 50% of the students are women. And in computer science, a whole lot less women. So, okay, well, that's how young men decide things. But then he started thinking, after he got his degree and he was in business and yada, 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 then he started remembering, you know, comp sci, he really likes comp sci. And he said, and then he remembered that universities like MIT, Harvard, and Stanford had a habit of putting classes online for free, which I don't understand that yet. I'm not sure what's going on there yet. I think they have overestimated their appeal. But that's okay. Put all these things. So then he thought, well, okay, great. I wonder how much I can learn there. Now, he had a bunch of little caveats that he made and stuff. He said, you know, well, how can you possibly hope to replicate something like such a multifaceted experience like going to college, you know, blah, 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 blah. He said, I like to think of college as like eating at a 5-star restaurant. You're not just paying for the food. You've got the staff and the elegant decor and the fancy French wines, blah, blah, blah. And I'm listening to him and I'm thinking, ultimately, people are not going to care about that. Businesses are not going to care about that. They're not going to care that you had a fancy waiter. They're going to want to know, do you have the knowledge? And so what he did was, he went and looked at the degree programs at MIT and then looked at all the free stuff that was available. And he built himself a curriculum that had like 33 courses in it. And he said, with one or two minor exceptions, it was identical to the course list an MIT student would use. And he said he was able to build it using the free online information. He says the only cost was a few textbooks. And that meant he could do the entire program for about $2,000. He said, you know, when I told my friends about this, he said, they just tried to say, well, that's not going to work. They said, yeah, I can't imagine trying to earn an MIT degree on your own. It's too difficult without the constant guidance and support of faculty members, blah, 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 blah. And then he said, that little thing, that didn't really ring true with me. He said, because when I went to college, I was in lecture halls where the professor would give talk in an auditorium of 300 students. So you weren't really getting much help from the professor. You had to figure stuff out for himself. So he decided he'd give it a shot. And he said, so do I have an advantage? That's the next question. Do I have advantages over a student who has all the resources that are at college? Do I have an advantage as a student who doesn't have all those resources? And he said he thought there were some. First of all, he sounds like he's a very disciplined young man. He's someone who keeps a time log. And for someone who is a disciplined person, the question is there a disadvantage to not being in a college environment? And he didn't think there was much of a disadvantage because he's a very disciplined person. He can line things out. In addition to being a disciplined person, he said, you can do things when you're studying on your own that you can't do in a live setting because everything's recorded. So since everything is recorded, lo and behold, you can speed it up, which I do this a lot when I'm watching videos. I speed them up. 1.5, 2.0, depending on the material, depending on what I'm trying to absorb. Because speeding up language to 1.5, unless the person speaks rapidly, that's not really that hard to listen at 1.5 rate. And it means that you are 1.5, half again as fast. He said what that all came down to is that he was able, for instance, I've lost what he was talking about. But he was talking about the fact that he could take classes that would normally span 4 months and he could watch them in 2 days of real time. And when he's doing the assignments, you know, he could have the solution key next to him and he could work through the assignments, check the solution key, decide whether it's right or not, go back, rework through the assignment, you know, ping back and forth and get this really good positive feedback loop that cognitive scientists recognizing as being critical to learning. So he said he was working through it, but he said he was on track to finish his program that he had put together in 12 months instead of 4 years. And I think this is just a harbinger of what's coming. I just cannot imagine that in the next 10 to 15 years, I cannot imagine that the post-secondary education structure, post-high school structure, is going to be able to survive. Because there will be more and more stuff online. And even if colleges begin to charge something for it, it will still be so much cheaper. And at the end of it, he said something that I think really comes down to the crux of it. He said, I believe in the self-education is the future. He said, if a person like me can earn an MIT degree in 1/4 of the time and 1/100th the cost, what's to stop other people from doing it as well? So it's going to be really interesting. Again, this next 10 to 15 years, really interesting to see how this is all going to play out. But as I said, I just cannot imagine that the college and university environment is going to be immune to these type of changes. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it to church because I have a dinner tonight. Have a great weekend, everyone.